WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
The summer is almost over. That means a new school year is upon us. But across the country, there has been talk of a teacher shortage. Are we short on teachers here in North Carolina? Should we be worried? We're asking the vice president of the North Carolina Association of Educators.
I'm really scared about this coming year, and I'm really scared about the impacts that it's going to have on our kids.
This is WBTV's Good Question. Alex Giles here with producer Jack Vandertal, and we are joined by Brian Proffitt, vice president of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Brian, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
We appreciate it. First, give us a little bit of a background in your education. Tell us about your education experience.
Yeah, I was actually just telling somebody the other day. I'm 43 years old, and I think all but 6 years in my life, I've been connected to a public school. Wow. So K-12 public schools, moved around the country quite a bit. Some Department of Defense schools, but mostly kind of small towns outside of military bases. Then I went to North Carolina State for graduate and undergraduate degrees. And then ever since then, I worked 3 years at Apex High School in Apex, 8 years at Hillside High School. And since then, I've played a variety of roles connected to either the Durham Association of Educators or the North Carolina Association of Educators, with a 1 year job for the district in between. So out of my 43 years, it's 37 of them. I'm in a public school role. So this is my life.
Wow, that is incredible. Tell me a little bit about how you became the vice president of the North Carolina Association of Educators.
Sure. So I was, when I became an educator, it was largely for two reasons. One was because I wanted to work with young people and teach history so that they could have a sense of why the world looked like it looked, why they were in it, where they were in it, and that it was only ever people like them that had changed it. And then the other thing was, it felt like if we wanted to make the world a better place for those kids, that if you had an organized body of educators, right, public school teachers, right, public school custodians, bus drivers, the people that our community counts on, loves, deeply respects every single day, and the people who are most closely associated with what the needs of our future and even our current reality are, that if that was an organized body of people, that we could really make some real changes. And so I came into teaching I'm sure we'll get to this in a minute, but my first job, I was 2 weeks into the school year started, I was working for a moving company because people still wanted to, in 2004, it was hard to get public school jobs in North Carolina. I'll say more about that in a second, but eventually got into the profession and started to get involved in the organization as a rank and file member. And then really was deeply inspired in 2012 when the Chicago Teachers Union went on strike. Because when they went on strike, they weren't just fighting about, they weren't just trying to get higher wages and benefits for educators. They put out a program called The Schools Chicago Public School Students Deserve. And they said, we need nurses, we need social workers, we need, more resources for immigrant families. We need to, curb policies in the school system that send more of our kids kind of to an earlier, relationship to the justice system, right? And they were saying, talking about the needs that our kids had past just the educators' needs, and it was electrifying, right? Because it was people who were saying, yeah, we want a better future for our kids, but that's not just test scores, right? We know every day that the reasons that students don't succeed is largely because of what's going on in the rest of their life. Mm. And how can we as an organization play a role in helping to speak to those concerns, right? And so got involved in NCAE in my local a couple of years before that in Durham. Spent some years on the local elected board, got elected the president, spent 4 years doing that. And while we were doing that, connecting with people all around the state to talk about what could the future be, right? If educators were organized and we were in lockstep with our parents and our kids, And the potential power of that, right? In public, in 97 out of 100 counties in the state, the public schools are the number one, two, or three employer, right? So if we talk about like, what is this state is public schools. It's not just like the creator of the future of the economy. Mm-hmm. It's literally the driver of the current economy and throughout our entire state. And so all of that stuff, you know, kind of, it just made increasing sense for us to try to play a leadership role in helping to manifest that, right? And helping to build an organization that could unite and organize educators around our needs, but recognizing that there's no difference between our needs and the needs of our students and our communities. In fact, most educators are parents, right? So they're intimately connected to the needs of the students because they're their kids. They're intimately connected to the lives of parents because they are parents, right? And they are educators, right? So it just seems like a really, it seemed like the ideal place to try to build some power towards a future that our kids can live in, right? And right now there's a lot of things happening in the state that are making it harder for our kids to really thrive. And that's our primary concern as educators. That's what we do all day, every day, is we want our kids to be able to fulfill their highest potential. And when we see a situation where they're not able to because of policies, because of, you know, underfunding, because, you know, attacks and disrespect on public school, we got to do something about that. So that's what we're trying to do.
I appreciate that in-depth answer. Of course, we're seeing and hearing headlines about teacher shortages across the country. Is there a shortage of teachers in North Carolina?
This is an interesting question. I think the answer to the question, is there a teacher shortage in North Carolina, is no. There are lots of teachers in North Carolina. Now, is there a push out that has been happening through state policies for over a decade that has made those teachers leave the profession that they love? Absolutely, right? And so I think like the question of shortage puts the emphasis in the wrong place, when actually what we've seen is a systematic effort to dismantle the public school system in this state over the last 12 years, that this is the inevitable outcome of that, right? I was saying to y'all before, in 2004, when I came into the profession, I couldn't get a job. I had a master's degree, right? Alex, I know you said you're a Carolina guy, but I came out of North Carolina State, right, with a master's degree. High recommendations on my student teaching. I had taught at the university for 2 years while I was there as an instructor of a class, not a TA, but a full instructor. And I couldn't get a job, right? Because everybody wanted to work in North Carolina public schools. Then I finally got a job a couple weeks into the school year. And every year I could count on getting a cost of living increase, and I could count on getting an experience step that would bump me up. So at a minimum, I was not getting a pay freeze, right? At a minimum, I was keeping up with the economy as prices were going up, right? And so we're talking about 2004, 2005, 2006, gas prices, right? I'm driving back and forth to Apex, but I can do it, right? I have a health insurance where I'm only responsible for 10% of a copay, and I have that for free. So there's due protection, there's due process protections that are among some of the best in the country for educators. We have a teaching fellows program where people are coming straight out of high school, getting recruited, and they stay in the profession, right? We had, every classroom K-3 had TAs in them, right? So that those educators at the critical years of our kids' human development, they could have additional supports in place. None of those things that I just named exist anymore. I spent 5 or 6 years with my paycheck exactly the same amount for 5 years, which meant I was taking a pay cut every single month. Now educators have to pay to get 80/20 health insurance, right? So we're responsible for more of the copay, and we have to pay for it. It used to be free. Educators who come into the profession right now, they aren't eligible for health insurance in their retirement. We got rid of the TAs so people in the lower grades don't have the support that they need. We got rid of the teaching fellows so we're not creating a pathway for people to come out of high school and go into the profession and be able to stick. And we have among some of the worst salaries in the whole country. So all those things have created a situation where in 2004, I was highly qualified and couldn't get a job. And now in 2022, every time I open up my phone, every time I look at Facebook, one more of my colleagues who has been committed to this profession their entire lives is leaving the profession because they cannot sustain their families, they cannot sustain their well-being, and most importantly, part of the reason they can't sustain their well-being is that we're not giving our kids what it is that they deserve, which is the thing that is most important to us. And the toll that it takes on educators to try to do that work every day and to know that we know how to do it, to know we used to live in a state that could do this well. We lived in that state. We don't live in that state anymore. And so people are leaving the profession. But it's not because we have a lack of people in North Carolina who want to teach. We have a lack of people who are able to and willing to sustain themselves through that disrespect, through that low pay, and through those terrible working conditions.
What have you heard from some of your teaching colleagues? What are they saying whenever you talk to them about why they're leaving?
All the things I just named. They can't pay their bills. They can't afford to have health insurance for their kid, right? People who have a young child and need childcare, it's more to have childcare than it is to have a job. The rent is going up, gas is going up, right? And all of that is happening in a context where, because of this push out that we've seen, people are now seeing increasingly fewer qualified people in the building, right? Having to make up for those gaps and be doing more in a job where you were already expected to do way too much already, right? The amount of unpaid labor, people have to leave work and go home and do 10 more hours a week just to keep up, right? Because our schedules aren't built in a way that allow people to do that work. So people, you know, eventually get to a place where they have been neglecting their own children and their own health and their own lives, and finally reaching breaking points around that. And all these other jobs that are emerging in the economy, right? Even like low wage, you know, what were typically low wage jobs, right? Now people are getting $20, $25 an hour to do those jobs. And people are saying, I could do that job for $40 for 40 hours a week and get paid what I'm doing to be a teacher and not have to bring my work home and not have to look in the newspaper and see the disrespect of my school's an F school or the public schools are failing in North Carolina and all these other things that people in political leadership of the state throw our way. Why deal with all that, right? It was already a profession where the kinds of sacrifices that people are making are really well known. Everybody knows that like teachers and other educators kind of like work ourselves to death for very little pay, and we do it because we love kids, right? And there's also like a part of that that's about sexism and about like counting on a group of largely women workers to continue to make those sacrifices over and over and over again, that eventually people have just reached a breaking point.
Wow. And obviously this isn't happening in a vacuum. An immediate ramification are the kids. So how are they? They're obviously impacted by this. How so? How is it that we do not know what you know in terms of how it affects the kids?
Sure. I mean, what we see every day is more. I mean, we've always seen, right, the ways in which students who, you know, suffer in poverty, you know, students of color who are dealing with the impacts of racism on a daily basis, you know, kids that have, you know, traumatic life experiences. We've always seen the ways in which our system has not had enough resources in place to really, really support those kids the way that they deserve to be supported. The last several years, that crisis is through the roof, right? So part of that obviously is isolation and COVID and all of the kind of trauma and suffering that people have been doing in the midst of that. But part of it is like coming to school and having a rotation of four, you know, different subs all day, right? Because that position isn't being filled in the classroom, right? So we're seeing gaps in terms of do we have trusted and consistent adults in the room who are the ones that kids will turn to when they are having those kinds of troubles, right? So that's one way that we're seeing kids suffer is we're seeing an increase, right, in the amount of factors that would lead to them having like, you know, considerable mental and emotional health, you know, challenges and a lack of trusted people in the building who have the experience and practice and the trust of those kids to be able to do that, right? So that's one element. Past that, right? And this is, you know, the state is trying to go even further in this direction. The more gaps that are not being filled by people who have gone through teacher prep programs, by people who have experience, now, right, we're sort of creating more space for people who don't have expertise to step into the classroom to teach our kids, right? Part of that is, do those people have the content area expertise that they need? But you know, in the way that our society kind of constantly undervalues what it is we do, educators who go through education prep programs study human development. They study brain development, right? They know how psychology works. Like all these things, you can't just walk in the street with a bachelor's degree in English and have those things already done. And so the ability to understand how kids learn, the ability to teach content in the ways that experienced educators do, the ability to have people on hand who can hold kids down in trusted ways through emotional crises, our kids are sort of suffering from all of that, right? And struggling with all of that. And many of them were already struggling because, right, their needs weren't being met by society in lots of ways already. So I'm really scared about this coming year. And I'm really scared about the impacts that it's going to have on our kids to not have the loving, caring, trusted, consistent professionals who know and are practiced in this work. They're with them every day.
Since the early 2000s, would you say this is the lowest point that you've seen in terms of public education? Or do you think that things could get worse?
I would ask that question of the political leadership of this state. I mean, what we saw, right, is we saw a North Carolina that was deeply, deeply committed to public infrastructure in the latter half of the 20th century. When we talk about this sort of Jim Hunt consensus era, right, of moderate Republicans, business-minded Democrats, we saw major investment in K-12, right, that you know, rivaled or surpassed everybody else in the South. We saw the building of a world-class university system. We saw a model pre-K program, right, that was built and people all over the country were replicating. We had these investments. We had these things. People talked about North Carolina as an education state. And what we started to see in the latter, when the recession hit and the impacts of the recession started getting pushed down onto us, right, rather than the wealthy people who were responsible for the recession, like those of us on the bottom got the pay freeze. And then when the political leadership of our state transition in 2010, right? And you had a radical takeover of the Republican Party and a new kind of Republican leadership in office in 2010, it became very clear at that point that their goal was to dismantle public schools in the state. So all those policies that I named that we saw shift over the course of my career, that stuff started immediately, starting in 2010, 2012. And so those of us that were paying attention, were talking about it then, we saw the edge of the cliff. I think now we're just closer to it. But is there further that we can go? Absolutely, right? Because the other thing that's happening while this is happening is they are increasing the amount of money available to go into charter schools and to go into voucher programs, right, for private schools. So that means there's going to be even less, right, like regulation, even less ability to ensure that our kids are getting what they need. So the more our public schools don't look like they're succeeding, the more those other options become more enticing in ways that further bleed resources out of the public school system and put them into places where we don't actually have any control. Those private schools can legally discriminate at this point. Charter schools don't have to provide transportation or food or services for kids with disabilities. Those things don't have to be in place. So we've seen this cliff coming. It's closer now and everybody else can see it a little better.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We are joined by Brian Proffitt, Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Brian, what changes or improvements are at the top of the list right now? You mentioned obviously a number of factors that have led to people saying that they need to get out of the profession. What do you think is the number one change that needs to happen immediately to get teachers back in schools?
Yeah, I feel like North Carolina just needs to remember its history. Like that's the number one change, right? Is that none of the things that I'm naming, the profession that I came into in 2004, we already know what the things are, right? If you give people a professional and competitive wage, right? Because the other thing is like, we have to think about what's the gap between, and people just, there's some big studies moving around on this week around the country of like naming the gap between someone who comes out of college and has a degree and can get this job versus if they go into teaching and what that gap is. I think in North Carolina, the number is like $19,000 on average per year. So we can pay people a competitive and fair wage. We can give people more due process rights and better working conditions. We can have more resources for counselors, social workers, nurses. We can go back to reinvesting in our public universities who have done a remarkable job over the history of our state of turning out educators, right? And now they've been so divested from and so beat down that they're not able to produce in those ways. So the answers are really just go back to where we were. There's a lot, right, that even if we got back to that place, we still could do better. But just at a minimum, we don't have to recreate wheels. We don't have to come up with radical new proposals. We know how to do it, right? And if you just listen to the folks who know how to do it, we can tell you that we know how to do it. We just need the resources to do it. The state's sitting on $6 billion in a rainy day fund right now. I don't know, feels kind of rainy out.
And just from us, you know, as journalists, we've been covering so many stories as of late and in the past years, you know, COVID, having to work and learn from home, and darker stories having to do with shootings, unfortunately, and tragically involving children at schools where they should feel safest. How does one cling on to hope that the best days of education are not behind us and going forward? How do we approach like a new day in light of like so much challenge that has faced us in the past?
Well, I think there's one way we face the new day is we have to be honest about what day we're in. And we got to ask everybody else to step up. And you know, again, for public school educators, this is not new, right? Like y'all saw us out on the streets in May 16th of 2018. There was 30,000 of us on the streets and there were 42 school systems that were shut down by that, right? Y'all saw us in the streets the next year, putting people in the streets again on May 1st, 2019. So, you know, some of us got arrested back in 20, like we've been saying this for a long time. And so the first hope for a new day is that everybody else starts saying it with us, right? And everybody else starts tapping into what did public schools do for me? What did public schools do for my family? What did public schools do for my mama, right? And saying, I have an obligation to defend those institutions that created who I am, right? So that's one part of what I think a potentially hopeful future requires. But the other thing is like, I don't know if y'all have ever spent time in a public school since you've been an adult, but I don't really believe in magic, but it's the closest thing to magic that exists. If you put committed public school educators of all stripes in a room with young, like brilliant and talented, creative young people, we can figure things out. We can solve any number of problems that you can put in front of us. So I have a deep faith in public school educators as problem solvers. I have a deep faith in our kids and our parents as our future, right? As the only way we're going to get through this. And so, you know, I think the principal hope I have is that the body of folks who have been stepping up, right, and who have been leading, like, are people who really, really, really know how to connect with folks and how to build something creative and new. I think the second layer of hope is that people are seeing the cliff and are saying, it's time for me to step up. It's time for me to join these folks who are fighting.
Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that pay raises for teachers were included in the last state budget. Was that enough to move the needle for anyone in the profession? Do you know?
I mean, we've seen them boast of pay raises, right, even in the budgets that were passed during the supermajority when Pat McCrory was the governor and the first 2 years of Governor Cooper's administration, right? Those always included quote unquote pay raises. But mm-hmm. if you look how they're structured, right, they did two things at once. They did put money in, right, small amounts of money, and they put it in the first 5 years. They put it in the first 10 years. So they essentially said to veteran educators, we don't need you anymore. And at the same time, what they did was they flattened the pay scales for everybody across the board. So right now in the state of North Carolina, if you work from years 15 to 25, you're going to get the same check. Why would you do that? Mm. Why would you do that, right? The only reason why people do that is because they deeply believe in and love. So yes, I think there was a one or two. I mean, again, I should know this, right, as somebody who's invested in policy in the state of North Carolina, but I don't, because it's kind of a joke. Yes, in the last budget, there's a 1-2% increase. Almost all of it is structured again at the bottom, where if you really take a step back and look at how they've structured their policy and what it is they're doing, it seems very clear that what they want is a revolving door of people who come in, work for 5 years, and then leave. Because again, why would anyone stay past that? Why would you work for 30 years in a profession when you're not going to have health insurance when you retire? Right? Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. And so, yeah, there's a pay increase in there, but what number of people get it, for how long they get it, right? And what impact it actually has on what their lives look like. If you ask folks that are in my level, year 18 in the profession, they're not seeing anything that makes a difference in their lives.
Brian, we've only got a couple minutes left for you, but I wanted to get at least two more questions in. This one, what challenges, obviously, aside from cost of living and compensation, what challenges do teachers face in the classrooms these days? Obviously, we're in the age of social media. It's got to be different from when you started in the early 2000s, right?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a whole host of you know, as technology changes, we've all got to figure it out and adjust. But again, mm-hmm. you know, largely, I trust public school educators to be navigating that. You know, I was in the classroom as the cell phone era began. And if I've got good relationships with my kids, right, and I'm able to set up a good classroom, like it's not going to be a big challenge, right? The problem is more, do we have the resources to keep the high functioning and effective adults in there with them to be able to help the kids navigate how to do that more effectively, right? So I think there's a whole host of kind of spin-off and periphery challenges that we can name that are going to be much bigger challenges if we don't solve the main problem, which is that we need consistent, caring, respected, well cared for adults that are in kids' lives, helping them navigate that every day. So I'm not scared of social media. I'm scared of our kids not having the resources and the support from caring adults that they need.
This is the last one I got for you, Brian. What message do you have for the parents, the guardians, and the students as we head into another school year?
We're in this together. We're on the same team. There's a whole host of folks who are trying to say, it's the educators that are the problem, or, you know, they say to the educators, well, it's the parents that don't care that's the problem, or every generation says, you know, well, these kids these days, they don't have any, you know, all that. No, we're the same team. Because like I said before, we're the same people. We're literally the same people. And so my message for educators or for parents and for students is like, look to the educators around you to build support with them. Ask questions about how they're doing. Ask questions about what it is that they need. Tell them what it is that you need. Be creative together. The only way we're going to solve this problem, because the political leadership of this state has had every opportunity at this point to do something about the situation that we're in. Clearly they're not invested in that. Clearly they have other priorities. And so we're going to have to do this ourselves, and we're going to have to build with each other and be in lockstep, right? And you can see it in any, you know, like when I talk about the Chicago teachers that went on strike in 2012, they talked about the schools their students deserve, and their students were out on the picket lines with them, and their parents were too, right? Because they were invested in the same thing. They all knew they needed the same thing. In the teachers movement, we say our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. There's no gap between us. It's the same exact thing. So what I'd say is, like, we're all on the same team, and let's figure out how to work better together.
Awesome. Jack, we got 1 minute left. Anything else you'd like to throw at Brian real quick?
I think I wouldn't just want to leave Brian with that. He had the last word. It was so poignant. So I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. Extremely insightful. Brian Proffitt, Vice President of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us, Brian.
Thanks for the chance, y'all. I had fun. Appreciate it.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media.
From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bull. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Huga Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.